I saw yesterday a stout matron whose sons are in the army with her team cutting hay. She cut 7 acres with ease in a day, riding leisurely on her cutter. Well, that would have been an unusual sight earlier, but it's one of the reasons that kind of an image that someone could see in the North, one of the reasons that the North proved so efficient at food production during the war. There were also advances in packaging goods in a way, food, agricultural products in a way that would allow them to have a longer life. You could stockpile them and distribute them more at your leisure. There were canned fruits and canned vegetables produced on a much grander scale during the war, as well as condensed milk. Now, none of these products came as a result of technology developed during the war. The technology was already in place to produce canned goods of these kinds and to produce condensed milk. But the demand generated by massive United States armies gave a tremendous boost to production and made many people wealthy who worked in this sector of the economy. Gail Borden, for example, who was the founder of the Borden Company that we're all familiar with now, was producing 17,000 quarts of condensed milk per month in the summer of 1862, most of that for army contracts. By the next summer, he was producing that much milk every day, again, mostly for army contracts. So Gail Borden had a very nice war, thank you. He came out in wonderful economic shape. The government became an enormously important contractor, as these things suggest, these examples suggest, an enormously important contractor. Goods poured into warehouses and supply depots as the government amassed and distributed clothing, food, and other things that the soldiers needed, stockpiled them in abundance so that United States soldiers, as we've commented earlier in this course, were taken care of on a scale undreamed of by armies elsewhere in the world and undreamed of in most instances south of the Potomac River as well. The United States Army, easily the best supplied in the world, really awash in goods in many instances. Only occasional shortages of food and clothing suffered by United States troops during the Civil War. And usually it was due to bad management, such as with the Army of the Potomac after the Battle of Fredericksburg, when Ambrose Burnside proved so inept as an administrator that he was unable to get goods from warehouses that were literally bulging with food and uniforms and other things to the men in the Army of the Potomac who needed them in the lines opposite Lee's Army at Fredericksburg. The transportation system in the North also did very well during the conflict and again provides a tremendous contrast to what was happening with the transportation system in the Confederacy. We've seen how the Confederates put up with enormous disruptions of their transportation network. Not only did Union armies strike and destroy many key sections of railroad and destroy bridges, the Confederates themselves destroyed much of their transportation network to try to slow Union armies down, and a good part of the rest simply fell into disuse because the Confederates could not produce the things needed to repair worn-out parts of their track. That was not the case in the North. Transportation boomed, not only railroads, but also other sectors of the transportation network. Now, the North lost access to the Mississippi River for about 2 years, as we know. That had been a major artery carrying products out of the Midwest and elsewhere in the North, out through New Orleans, but also bringing some things upriver. The North made up for that loss, at least in part, by expanding the east-west Great Lakes and canal trade. They moved a lot of things west to east that previously had been moved north to south along the Mississippi River. The Erie Canal carried 50% more tonnage during each of the war years than during the peak antebellum years. Increased internal water commerce and the needs of the Union Navy gave Northern shipbuilding a tremendous boost. A good period if you were in that business. Railroads grew even more rapidly in the North than did water transport. Several Northern railroads, in fact, doubled their traffic, their volume of traffic during the conflict. And only one, the Baltimore and Ohio, was vulnerable to Confederate destruction. All the Confederate railroads, of course, were subject to disruption. Only the B&O was for the North. We've seen why in the formation of West Virginia, those last two counties were added to the roster to bring the total up to 50. That was so the B&O would always be in United States territory, where it dipped into those counties below the Potomac.